This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Respond 25, Australia's only paramedic careers conference. Join us this August in Brisbane as we explore the vast opportunities for paramedics outside of traditional ambulance roles. You'll network with some of the best employers, educators, and trailblazers in the industry, but tickets are limited. So to find out more and secure your place, head to www.theshiftextension.org.
Hey Nick, check out what Lou drew.
What did you?
Sorry, drawing.
Draw. I'm actually bringing this up because I don't even know what it is. It's like a mutant hand.
What
chicken.
Is that? That's a fox.
That's a cat.
It's whatever you want it to be.
Oh my god!
It's a Russian experiment. That is like a duck without. It's a duck with. What's that condition where you don't lose your hair?
Ducks don't alopecia. Have pointy.
Yeah, it's a duck with alopecia.
Ducks don't have beaks.
Look at my drawing.
They got bills.
Oh my gosh! Really? Yeah. What is that?
Is that that's a Japanese snow leopard.
Thank you. Exactly what I drew.
Right up.
Obviously, it's a Japanese snow leopard.
Are you serious?
I can't find the insulin train
because
anywhere.
Because it doesn't exist.
No, it does. If any listeners out there have been shown the insulin train,
send it to
write
us.
Write to us.
Please.
Email.
Because I need it. It used to be so good in the classroom. It used to be so good.
Yeah, I want to know what it is.
I will share with you the hypoglycemic boat.
Wait, one other thing we need to do today. Two things.
Uh-oh.
It won't take long.
Go to hell. Sorry. She's got a radio voice.
No, I don't.
And an attention span.
You have the worst fucking attention span.
Name one time I haven't been focused.
You both. Both. Both of you. Nick thinks that I carry a shiv on me at all times.
I'm going to find Nick.
Okay, here's your options.
Okay, we're listening.
Clinical. Cipric.
Cardiac.
Is that a word?
Yes.
CPR-induced consciousness?
Consciousness.
Is that a word? Like, have people coined it?
They've made it.
It's a new thing.
It's been coined.
Cipric.
Yep. Cipric.
Okay.
Cipric.
Or, okay. That's a clinical one.
Yep.
Or.
Boring.
The thing with Cipric is, like, so when I was working in an area where there was a massive multicas like 20 years ago, every single person who lived in this place claimed to be first on scene. I reckon I met 20 people who were first on scene. Everyone wanted to claim it. Since Cipric has been... And I didn't even know it was called CPR.
Yeah,
but since this conscious-inducing CPR has been shared, everyone I talk to is like, oh, yeah, I've been to it. I mean, it's rarer than that.
I've seen it once.
I haven't. Mm-hmm. Like, it's rarer than that.
Mm.
I just don't believe the number of people who claim to have seen it actually have.
Mm.
So if you've seen it, great. We can talk about it. I'm on a learning curve. I understand the mechanisms behind it, and it would probably be horrifying for anyone who hasn't heard of it yet.
Mm.
But I haven't seen it.
So that's one option. Option two?
Let's run with Cipric.
Mm.
I had some better options.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because we've already done a clinical one. Have we done a
clinical
one? Yeah, okay. All right. Okay. Yeah, super. Cipric's not even important.
Yeah.
Just stop pumping on the chest.
Them? You do.
Yes. Ketamine? No, what do you?
You can use whatever you want, really. Bit of midazolam, bit of fentanyl.
Yeah, no.
Bit of morphine. You'll just stop doing CPR and they'll stop real quick.
Actually, you know what? And that's
problem solved.
That's the podcast done. Like, if they start waking up.
It sounds cooler than it is. It's kind of like, and there's like interfering versus not interfering. Just give them some drugs.
And that's
the just in case cannula.
The who, sorry?
The just in case cannula.
Oh, just in case.
Oh, I thought he said Justin.
Justin. I was like, who's Justin
yeah,
Case?
Justin.
Yeah, me too.
So the just in case cannula is the idea, using the example of a cannula, and there's a paper about.
Yeah, but you normally speak, like you normally pronouncing so well, but both of us heard Justin Case.
Justin
Does
Case.
He,
like,
though?
Like it was a name.
Yeah.
Justin Case cannula.
Justin
new brand
Case.
Of cannulas.
Justin Case.
Okay, what else you got?
The Justin Case cannula is essentially a segue into just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Okay. Mm. All right. So the Justin Case cannula.
Justin
loop.
Case.
Or
Justin.
Our boy Justin.
Or there's one called the ceiling of intervention versus ceiling of care.
Nah, that's way too much for this time after.
Our little
all right,
brains.
Back to Justin.
Justin.
Or there's one on food, fitness, and sleep.
Stop giving me options. I want to talk about Justin.
Let me see if I can find this paper.
What paper?
It's by Hugo.
Why do we want to
Why isn't it by Justin?
Look, Lou and I are being silly, all right? It's not Justin Case. It's not a boy's name. It's
but
the
just in
case
found it.
Cannula.
No. Yeah.
So found this it. Is like this is like a prophylactic just, cannula
yeah.
that
yeah.
you may or may not use.
Yeah.
Right. Have you seen this?
I believe so. Very rarely.
Is this going to... Is that going to be too much?
What is
noise?
No, it's your wife banging around in the background. Well, we don't have a studio.
It'll be fine.
Will it it's pick fine. Up on this though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me listen back to it.
No, she's fine. It's like a cameo. Nah.
Nah. Go.
Go. Do it. Do it. That was Brie putting.
Coco, what's
is that cat biscuits?
Oh, she thinks it's her pickies.
It's because it's the fattest cat in the world. Any noise, it thinks it's food.
Little girl.
What's the paper?
Oh, so I found this paper and it's going to form the basis of our conversation today.
The Just In Case cannula. So the Just In Case cannula is a new cannula being invented by Justin Case.
Yep. My boy.
That's
my boy.
Justin.
My boy.
This is the Just
In
case
cannula.
Cannula.
So this is like a prophylactic cannula.
Yep.
That you'd put in to maybe use.
Essentially, it came from a paper that I'm about to talk about.
Mm.
But the idea of the discussion is around sometimes we do things because we can do them.
Mm.
And sometimes it's better to just sit on our hands.
But do you think sometimes people do things because it makes them feel more important and more involved?
I think as paramedics, sometimes we've put our value as what we can do or what's in our kits. So when we're doing things and doing skills, we feel like we're being paramedics more. Whereas sometimes it's better to just sit on your hands and watch.
Yeah, but that's not important.
Mm.
It is, because the most important tool in your arsenal is your brain.
As opposed to?
What's in your kit.
Oh, gotcha. I'm with you. Sorry, it's late in the day.
Anyway.
Okay, so the just-in-case cannula.
The just-in-case cannula. The cannula is the example.
Could also be labelled the inappropriate cannula.
Yeah.
The unnecessary cannula. The why did you put it in cannula.
Mm.
Yeah.
None personally, of those sound like boys' names.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're going to go with just-in-case.
Personally?
Personally, I like just-in-case.
We're going to run with just-in-case then.
JC.
How many of these have you seen, Lee?
JC cannula.
How many of these have you seen put in inappropriately?
Not many.
But some.
But, yeah.
Why do we put in cannulas?
Administer medications.
Do you think we put them in just in case?
I certainly was.
Is that a thing? Is that being taught at uni? Like, just in case you need to give, in case the patient deteriorates.
So I was going to say, well, a deteriorating patient. It's easier to cannulate a vein that's pumping than a vein that's not.
How often do your patients really deteriorate?
Well, that's a risk stratification, a risk management question.
Everyone dies.
Everyone's dead. They leave.
And they're also. They're also benchmarked against the skills they do. They're not marked to withhold stuff. So they're being educated at the very beginning to do things.
Okay, have you ever done an assessment whereby you got marks for not doing something?
Absolutely.
No, really?
Really?
Withholding?
Or like missing things, yeah. Like missing interventions?
No, as in like you could do it, but you decided not to. So you got
You've withheld an intervention.
Like getting in trouble for it?
Yes.
Not necessarily.
Marked down.
No. Have you ever been marked up for not doing an intervention?
Oh, sorry. I misheard what you said. No, I don't think so.
No, so they're marked on what they do. So they're actually taught. And I shouldn't say they. We, the profession, has been historically assessed and benchmarked against the skills they do, not the skills they withhold. And that is the crux of this discussion.
Because I feel like the value of you as a clinician isn't about what you can do. It's about knowing that you can do it and then withholding it.
It's knowing when not to do it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
But then the discussion around the just-in-case cannula. There'll be people on both sides of the fence. You absolutely never should do it and I never do it, right? And those who say, well, we should be able to do it sometimes. Are there, let's err on the side of that first. Are there any cases or any situations where you think the just-in-case cannula is reasonable?
Maybe in some like blunt trauma patients.
Mm.
But really.
What about peds?
Caused more trauma.
Mm. Okay.
Psychological and like actual trauma. And we don't do peds very often. Unless they're like really, really, really young, they've got like fatty little hands. And if you're not going to use it, I'm just a big believer in it. If you're not going to use it, why do it?
Because you might use it.
Yeah, but you might not.
Is it better to err on the side of it? I'm playing devil's advocate.
You think of any intervention, right? Whether it's a cannula, whether it's an airway, whether it's a drug. It's everything that we do for a patient or anything you do really in medicine is balancing the benefits versus the risks.
Mm-hmm.
It's a risk-benefit analysis.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we have drug therapy protocols. So you use that. So your indications are your benefits and your contraindications are your risk. And the protocol allows you to make an informed decision about making it, balancing that. So ideally, if the benefits outweigh the risks, then we do the intervention. Where the risks outweigh the benefits, then we don't do the intervention. Mm. But I think sometimes when we're talking about like outside of drugs, it's very easy to do that with drugs.
Why are there protocols at the moment for drugs, but there's guidelines for interventions, right? Because this the cannula topic here, it only really exists because it's a guideline. It's your choice when you put one in or not. Mm-hmm. But there's protocols around drugs. Protocols are strict. Guidelines are vague. Mm. Why is a guideline around something like cannulation?
Why is there a guideline?
Instead of a protocol. Because a protocol would remove the just in case.
Because issue. I don't think it can be black and white. Mm. I think it's up to the discretion of the clinician. Mm.
But drugs are black and white?
Yeah, because it's been vetted by, you know, clinical trials.
Mm. But some of those protocols, they're in direct competition with the manufacturer's recommendations sometimes.
Like when?
Oh, okay. Give me a minute.
You've got to come up with an example.
I'm going to now because I've, yeah.
I see what you're saying, but I think that's a really good question.
There's no hard or fast rule though, because one clinician could justify it and the other could not based off.
Yeah, correct.
Lots of different things.
But does a cannula company give recommendations about when other patients should get a cannula? No. But they'll give recommendations. A drug company will give recommendations about which patients should receive our drugs.
But this is what I'm saying. Like that in...
Like the guy who makes the cannula isn't going to say, oh, give them to the blunt trauma patient, but not the penetrating trauma patient. But if someone has moderate to severe pain, the people that make morphine will say, give morphine. But if they have low pain, they say, don't give morphine. Mm. Or if they have kidney problems, say, don't give morphine. And essentially, when those drugs are put out to market, they're put out to be able to be used for certain situations based on the safety that is demonstrated and the efficacy that's demonstrated during the clinical trials before it's proved to be used in humans in that country.
Hence why there's no protocol determining when we can and can't put in an IV.
Yeah.
Because it's different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This got deep.
This took a corner. A turn. A corner.
I'm prepared to take back my original statement about some of the DPs. But I do have a question. Okay. It's something as simple as paracetamol.
Yes, go on.
Right? Why is that so rigidly controlled in a DDP down to almost archaic maths that you actually can't get the volumes
accurate?
As opposed to reading the bottle, which is from the manufacturer's
recommended.
Well, that's an outlying example of when I'm talking about the DDPs are slightly different to what a manufacturer would recommend.
Yeah, okay.
Because we've, like, historically across Australia, we've actually overcomplicated paracetamol, that it actually takes, you know, long division maths to work out when it's actually written on the bottle and you can draw it up in literally.
Sometimes I feel like we do that maths just for the sake of doing it.
No, but why? This is important. It's in the DDP, so you have to.
I don't know.
So I'm prepared to take back that statement partially, but that is an outlying example of the ridiculousness of, you know, the difference in guidelines, protocols, and manufacturer recommendations. Where did that maths come from?
I don't know.
No, but we're doing it.
So you want to do the paracetamol maths now?
No, sunrise over sunset, punch me in the head.
what?
Sunrise over sunset. Look, this is how I do maths.
No, I know that, but I've never learnt the punch me in the head part.
No, because I hate maths.
What?
Right?
Sunrise over sunset.
I love...
Required stock volume.
Yeah. There's nothing more I enjoy than having like a graduate or a newly qualified or a student with me that I can say, hey, do the maths really quickly. Meanwhile, I'm consulting the bottle.
And then I finish and go, yes, I can do
that.
Looks accurate. No, yeah, I find it.
So the paper.
Yes.
The paper was written by a gentleman by the name of Hugo Everson. Good on you, Hugo. Paramedic from the Gold Coast, 2021. The paper's titled Idle Peripheral Intravenous Cannulation and Observational Cohort Study of Pre-Hospital Emergency Department Practices. So essentially what he did, without getting into the nuts and bolts, was look at what
how to have the longest title on an article.
Yeah, I blanked out. I was like, what? What did he even say?
Essentially, he looked at how many of the cannulas that were being placed pre-hospitally by an ambulance service were being used in an emergency department.
In an emergency department?
Yes. Right. So 1,249 patients, 380 pre-hospital cannulas, 877 ED cannulas.
Uh-huh.
366 of them, so 30%, remained unused at 24 hours.
30%. Okay.
In the pre-hospital group, 40% of the cannulas that were placed were never used pre-hospitally.
How many?
40%.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And compared to ED, 33% were never used.
Okay.
It's placed.
So we're not that far different from the ED place just in cases.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, again, I'm going to play devil's advocate. I don't actually know which side of this fence I sit on at the moment. I will make a decision at some point because I don't like fence sitters.
Nursing staff inserted idle PVCs at a rate of 35% compared to doctors at 29% and paramedics at 19%.
Oh.
We placed the least amount of idle cannulas.
Idle cannulas.
It's interesting because I would like to see a comparison of these idle cannulas that show rates of infection, complications, things like that, because that's how you manage risk.
Mm-hmm.
What this, and I'm not criticizing this paper, you need this kind of information, but what this paper would do from a cultural perspective is almost shame the people who are putting in just in case cannulas. And they're actually not that high, like 30%, 19%, like they're actually not that high. Mm. And when you create fear around using something, sometimes then we miss the opportunity that we should have had to put it in.
Yes.
So I would prefer to see this paper aligned with the rates of infection, complications and things like that from the just in cases. Mm. Because if you've got 30% cannulas that aren't being used and 1% of them result in infection or complication, that's a manageable risk as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. But if it was, you know, 20% of them did, well, then we should have a talk about, you know, retraining.
I just pulled a paper from somewhere.
He's quick on his fingers.
He is.
Journal of Clinical Nursing. Mm. Study observed 1,400 cannulas among 368 patients to look at side effects.
Did you say 1,400 cannulas from 300 patients?
Yeah.
Are you ready to unlock exclusive content and take your paramedic journey to the next level?
We know that staying ahead of the curve can be tough, but that is why we created our membership program.
The Shift Extension membership, where you'll gain access to premium resources, expert insights, and a community of like-minded individuals.
Enjoy early access to new content, exclusive events, and personalized support. Plus, get discounts on our training days and symposiums.
Join today and start achieving your goals faster. Visit our website or click the link in our show notes to sign up now. It's like three cannulas per person.
Or they get replaced.
Oh, so these are people in hospital for a long time.
Is it like 3 days?
Yeah. Hey, Bree, how often do you replace a cannula in the ward? Yeah, any.
Any, like is it every like 3 days or?
We're asking my wife. She's a lovely nurse.
Oh.
Any ambulance cannula to be resited within 24 hours.
Oh.
72 hours for any ward.
Yeah.
Mm. And that would be directly related to the filthy places that we work.
We're nasty.
24 hours for an ambulance or paramedic place cannula.
Yeah.
And 72 hours for one place in hospitals every 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Okay. So this found that 44% of those cannulas had some phlebitis as a complication.
Mm.
Infiltration.
44.
Yeah. Infiltration, 16.3%. And occlusion and dislodgement between 7 and 5%.
Whoa.
I mean, that's half of them.
Yeah.
44% is nearly half.
Yeah.
Do you think sometimes, though, that we don't value the side effects that are occurring because we don't see them? Like if I put a cannula in and I miss it 6 times and I turn someone's arms into a, you know, a pincushion and I go, oh, but I got a cannula in it on my 5th go.
Mm.
I didn't use it for anything, but I got a cannula in.
Would you do that, though? I doubt you would do that.
I wouldn't do that, but people do.
I have struggled
to cannulate. But I have done that in the past, though.
Well, I was about to say, I have struggled to cannulate a patient in the past, but it was because of the vital necessity of getting it. We needed it.
Mm.
Yeah, but did you use it?
Yes, that's what I mean. So I have turned a patient into a pincushion before because they're incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
But we needed it.
Risk versus benefit, though.
What happens, though, is you see people getting 1, 2, 3 attempts that's never used because the patient could get sick.
Where does that come from?
Well, once you've started to cannulate someone, it's like a case last week where someone cracked a methoxy vial and then never used it. Why did you crack it if you're never going to use it? Like there wasn't a thorough assessment done. The same kind of principle applies. If you are preparing to cannulate that person, and then you decide they don't need it because you've cannulated them three times and missed, you actually haven't assessed that patient properly, because suddenly now you've decided the risk of cannulating that person is higher than the need for them to have it.
But do you think that we don't value the risk because we don't see the outcome?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I reckon.
Absolutely. There's so many things like that we don't see. I mean, how often do we get any follow-up on any of the patients?
How old is that paper, that one you just read?
2021.
Fairly recent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the 44% phlebitis one.
Mm.
Oh, that one?
Yeah.
Let's have a gander.
Mm.
Jesus.
Yeah, the just in case one was 2021.
Okay.
I can't find it. I've lost it.
Oh, boo.
Oh, no, here it is. 2019.
Okay, so fairly recent. Right. Yep. Well, no, it's not. 6 years.
Oh, I keep thinking it's like 2019.
It's 2033.
No, it's not. Are you okay?
Yes.
Did you ever watch Back to the Future?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he went back to 1955 from 1985, which is the same as us traveling back to 1995.
Oh, stop it.
That hurts me.
My brain.
Anyway.
Mm, right.
So, I'm using a term inappropriately placed cannulas, right? Mm. That's probably actually unfair. The just in case cannulas.
Yeah.
There would be some cannulas that were not used.
Mm-hmm.
There would be some that maybe weren't used but were later.
Mm.
There may be some that were inappropriately placed and some that weren't.
Mm.
How do we actually quantify this?
Mm.
I don't know.
Because I'm always cautious of creating fear around this kind of stuff, because when you create uncertainty and fear or shame, people are less likely to do it.
I think there's use cannulas as an example, I think there's also some, we're influenced by some of the feedback you get at hospital. So sometimes patients need interventions, but the question you need to ask yourself is, do they need the intervention now or can they wait for it later? Mm-hmm. So for example.
That's risk management though.
Yeah, correct. So do they need a pre-hospital cannula or do they need a cannula? Do they need a pre-hospital sedation or do they need a sedation to put their ankle back together?
This comes back to the structure of support that they are used to working in.
Mm.
Because again, most paramedics in, you know, regional and metropolitan areas are used to a 20 or 30 minute turnaround with a patient.
Yeah.
And most in ambulance services will make it the hospital's problem. I don't need to worry about what's going to happen with this patient too far down the track because I'm going to shed the custody of that patient. Whereas in the private sector, there's a different kind of approach, because often in the private sector, you're going to be with that patient a lot longer. And in the private sector, quite often, you're responsible for their discharge. Mm. So there's a lot more analysis and consideration of the patient's needs and positions in that environment, because you can't just handball that responsibility to hospital and drive off. So it's situationally dependent.
Mm-hmm. Are there patients on road that you are putting IVs in that you know are going to get imaging, but you're not going to administer any medication?
Yes.
Like strokes. Patients.
Yeah. So that's a good example of a case where you might put one in, but you're not going to use it pre-hospitally, but you know that they'll use it in hospital.
Justin. Yep.
And it can expedite. It will. It can expedite their
imaging,
which will expedite the diagnosis. Yeah. Which will expedite their treatment, which is important in, say, a time-critical thing like a massive vessel occlusion.
Does this stipulate the size of the cannulas that we're putting in?
No.
That's a pity.
That
would also be really interesting, is the bore size of the cannula.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to reference my lovely wife, Bree, in our podcast. I'm going to reference my lovely wife, Bree, in my podcast.
You're back in. You're having a cameo.
Educated me on the appropriateness of your cannula size. So in paramedicine, we're very used to going, if they're sick, they get a large bore cannula in case we need to give fluids quickly. But how often are we giving fluids quickly?
What's the definition of large bore?
18 gauge and up, 16, 14 gauge.
Okay.
So an 18 gauge, I think from
18's a bit small.
A 20 gauge flow rate is about 65 mils per minute. An 18 gauge is about 100, 16 is about 250, right?
Mm.
So you go, well, the flow rate's higher, but realistically, how often are you giving high flow rate volume resuscitation? Like a 20 gauge, you can put a liter through in, less than 15 minutes. That's pretty fast. Mm. So
14 gauge is 250, 16 gauge 180, 18 gauge 90, 60, 30, 20.
Yeah.
Close.
So we kind of taught, oh, if they're sick, they get big cannula in case they need fluids quickly, which doesn't happen very often.
And I've heard this peddled, yes.
And then we go, okay, if I'm not going to do the fluids, I'll use a 20, but why do I need a 20? Why can't I put a 22 or a 24 in? And my wife, Bree, who's an oncology nurse, you know, in hospital, it's very common just to use 22 gauges in adults, and they just get replaced every few days because all they need is access to give drugs.
Mm-hmm. That would make things a lot easier for a lot of people.
Mm. Like, how often have you put a small gauge cannula, like a 22, 24 in an adult?
No, it would also make things far more comfortable for those adults.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
I'm sure a 24, 22 gauge would be much less painful than...
Last time I was in the ED, though, they stuck an 18 in me.
What did you need it for?
I was sick.
Did you need an 18 gauge cannula?
I don't think so. It hurt like a mofo. Mm. But they stuck a green in me. So maybe that's hospital dependent and ward dependent as well.
Because you can be quite successful with small cannulas. I've reduced a lady's femur with ketamine through a 24 gauge in her toe.
Well, I mean, there's a statement that access is access, right? You got access, it's access.
I lied the man with a 22 gauge in his finger. It worked.
A finger.
That's all he had.
A finger. That's all he had.
It was just a finger.
It's more issues than just a lysis here. He's a big trauma. Just a finger.
Just a finger.
I'm having flashbacks.
He's not just a finger.
Flashbacks to Iraqi, Nick. Thank you.
Oh. Sorry.
Just a finger. you lies the patient through their finger.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a case study.
Well, is that or you don't have IV access and you die?
Yeah. Access is access.
Access is access.
Yeah.
And the thing was, we'd like, 18 gauge, 20 gauge, 80 gauge, 20 gauge, ACF, forearm. It's like, well, he's got a little one here. I'll just put a little 22 on that.
Why don't you do his eyelid next time? Yeah. Fire out finger. Ignore me.
We'll talk about this later.
So if access is access, is this paper criticizing the inappropriate? Oh, I keep saying calling them inappropriate. What's the conclusion?
Let me pull up the paper.
Curious.
The conclusion from Hugo.
Because I've been making the assumption.
One-third of peripherally inserted venous cannulas within an emergency setting remain idle, suggesting unnecessary risks and costs.
34%.
One-third.
Oh, sorry.
Pre-hospital and ED.
Wow.
Insertion practices differed, with idle insertions 2.4 times more prevalent if inserted than ED than pre-hospital. So basically saying is that you get a lot more insertions in ED that remain idle than paramedicine. So maybe paramedics are actually better at differentiating which are the cannulas that they need to put in.
Well, also, I mean, this could be twisted the opposite way, that this is only looked at what was used. It's not looking what was appropriately used.
Mm.
Just a play devil's advocate is, I mean, most paramedics will insert a cannula and use it for something.
Well, the other thing is, like, it doesn't go into how many cannulas get put in for ondansetron when it could be given as a wafer.
Because
I know that a lot of cannulas get put in simply for intravenous ondansetron.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's the most common drug. Intravenous ondansetron is the most common drug given intravenously.
Well, see, that also came out some years ago. This was about 5 years ago that ondansetron came out at the time in Queensland as, here's in quotation marks, the most misused drug by paramedics. And what happened in the 6 months following that was it was the most underutilized drug in the state.
Yeah.
So, again, it created this fear and shame around people who were using it.
Mm.
And people were actually criticizing each other for giving ondansetron. So, it was like swinging the pendulum.
We're great at doing that. But also, like, analgesia, right? How often, why can't we give fentanyl intranasally to adults?
This has been the question of the ages. This is for one state.
And I think when you start working privately, the other considerations is, well, resourcing. Like, if I'm doing a private job and I've only got three cannulas and two bungs, I'm not going to waste one on someone who doesn't need it because I don't know what's going to happen for the rest of that trip. If they need analgesia, I can give it a different way, or I have another drug that I can give a different way, then I'll do that because I don't want to burn into a finite resource because you can't improvise a cannula.
No, you cannot.
Could you?
Well, no.
I'm just genuinely curious. I was just looking at
guidelines.
Yeah, for fentanyl. It's available intranasally in every state in Australia,
mm-hmm.
But I don't think anything on here differentiates. Oh, it's a pity it doesn't differentiate between if that's adult or child. All right, we're going to ring Matt. For those who are unaware, what I'm looking at is the Clinical Guideline Manifesto, which is an incredible comparison of what different state services around Australia and New Zealand are doing for certain interventions. So I was just looking at adult. Oh, sorry, that's actually adult analgesia. Adult analgesia is ticked for Queensland.
There you go.
I'm going to look at the DDP.
In Queensland?
Yeah.
I know it's for adults.
Yeah.
I can tell you.
So who can't give it to adults?
No one.
What do you mean?
Everyone can.
Didn't you say, why can't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, as in like we're putting in cannulas to give fentanyl. Why don't we just give them intranasal instead?
What do you mean by the protocol? I thought things have been changing. So I started looking stuff up. I haven't worked under that protocol in 5 years, so. Right.
What's
so
your
saying,
take?
So you're saying people are unnecessarily cannulating when they can just give it up the nose.
Correct.
Right. It's the same resistance that people had when the LMA eye gels came into practice in a lot of places. People actually liked having more tools, syringes and things they could control. The eye gel is super simple to put in and yet people resisted it. It's the same kind of mentality. Who knows? I don't know. That's a cool paper.
Mm. I like it.
I like it. I think there's some room to expand it and certainly improve it because I don't encourage the shame or fear that these things do create. I mean, I have no doubt that was not the intention of the paper or the author or anyone involved in it, but that is the cultural response to these things that quite often happens. What'd you learn? Everyone gives cannulas for fentanyl when they should be sticking it up their nose.
I'm going to consider that now.
Good on you, Lou.
Intranasal fentanyl for you, for everyone.
For everybody.
No one's getting an IV.
It's going to be a paper in 10 years of how many people have not put in a cannula when they should.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to our podcast. If you have any questions or concerns or
Qualms,
send us an email.
Concerns?
We said concerns. hello@theshiftextension.org. We are on Facebook and Instagram, and we also have Patreon if you want to check that out. Thanks, guys, for listening.
Cheerio.
Goodbye.